What are people up to in town? Find out on Out There Wednesday afternoons from 4 to 5 on Valley Free Radio for live encounters from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond. We don't care if we live out of date. We don't care if we're a little bit late. Gonna make a scene, baby, me and you. On my rocking bicycle that's built for two. Thanks for tuning in to Out There today. It is Wednesday, October 4th. And today's show, a lot of it is going to be an interview with or a conversation with my friend Shira Lynn. She used to live in the Northampton area, but moved to Williamstown like 5 or 6 years ago up in the northwest corner of Massachusetts. And she's talking about some of the work that she's doing, the community organizing that she's been doing around resolutions, town-by-town resolutions to limit pesticide use, particularly as it hurts bees and pollinators. She was on her way with her friend Tony on Monday night to a hearing at the State House in Boston with Peggy McLeod from Northampton, Florence, about this pollinator resolution thing. And so she came by potluck. Shira and Tony came by potluck. And I interviewed her there. There's a lot of background noise in this interview. It may be too much. If it's too much, just call me. Let me know. And I can play another clip. If you need to call the radio station, it's 585-1033. And before I play that thing with Shira, interview with Shira, I think I have some other announcements. Well, I want to thank everyone who came to the Pedal People 15th anniversary party on Sunday at Veterans Field. It was a really fun event, and it was just so wonderful to see a lot of community support. So thanks to everyone who came. And thanks to everyone who didn't come, who still supported in so many different ways. I guess I'll just start with Shira.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Shira Lynn. I live in Williamstown.
What are you doing in Florence tonight? It's Monday, October 2nd. Where are you on your way to?
So we're getting up early morning tomorrow, and we're heading to Boston to the State House for a hearing on some pollinator bills. And we're going to get there early enough to go and do visits to the different legislators also first, which is exciting.
Can you say a little bit more about the pollinator bill?
Yeah.
What is this?
So the bit of background is that I heard, I think through the permaculture listserv, actually, like a year and a half or something ago, that there was going to be a Western Mass Pollinator Network. And I found out a little bit about it, and they were trying to have people in different towns pass resolutions to try to deal with the huge decrease in pollinator populations worldwide, but really look locally and say, well, we're noticing it here. It's not like it's just this abstract thing far away. And what can we do to help? So luckily, there are some people in town who actually wanted to jump on board, which is really exciting because it's really hard to do it alone.
In Williamstown.
Yeah, in Williamstown, and then in a few of these different towns. People in Cummington and in Plainfield and Windsor. I'm working with some people in Amherst and Northampton. It turned out that people in Great Barrington had done it the year before in Great Barrington through the Ag Commission. So we made up our resolution, and we had to bring it first to the Ag Commission. And because some of those people are like CSA people and related to organic farming, they sort of got it. And we managed to get them to support it and sign on to the resolution. And then we had to bring it to town meeting, which is nerve-wracking. Have you been to town meetings before?
City hall meetings. We have city hall meetings.
Does it feel like the mob is there, or is it a different feeling?
No, but I've read about Hadleytown meetings, and it kind of looks or sounds like the mob.
Yeah, they're really nerve-wracking because I think some people have paid attention beforehand, and a lot of people haven't. Uh-huh. And then everything can just turn on a dime depending on who speaks and how it's taken and how impassioned they are, or convincing or beloved or whatever. So it can get really, wiggly and scary. But I had worked the year before on resolution to oppose the pipeline infrastructure. That was the Kinder Morgan that was coming through our neck of the woods and other people's necks of the woods. And also, there's another one. I can't think of the other one right now, but there was another one that we did, and we passed. Oh, it was a plastic bag and polystyrene. So I'd worked on both of those campaigns and helped present them at town meeting, and we managed to pass them both. And so, yeah, it was really great. So the idea is you pass these town by town, and then eventually they're visible to the state government, and then the state government feels empowered to do something and not have people pissed at them.
Yeah. They feel a support statewide.
Right. Yeah. They can be like, well, these guys wanted it. That's why we're doing it. I'm not to blame. Yeah. You know? Yeah. So it's the same kind of effort with this.
So you got the resolution passed?
So we got the resolution passed.
When did it happen in Williamstown?
Our town meeting's in May. We just do one a year. And then we're hoping other towns will also pass them. And it's been basically like word of mouth, I think. So if other towns hear about them, there's lots of support to have them pass resolutions in their own town too. But what's happening now is at the same time they've been working on some statewide bills. So there are some bills to increase forage, like along roadsides and things. So to change the way that the towns like mow highway strips, or the state mows highway strips, that kind of stuff. And then this one, that's the one that has been, I guess, in the circles I've been running, it's the one that's the most favored, was put forth by Carolyn Dykema. I don't know which county she's in.
State rep? Or who is she?
I think she must be a state rep. I should know that. But, and it's, I think the latest number for it is H2113, and it's an act to protect pollinators. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it's called. So what it does is it makes it so that regular people can't buy any of the pesticides that are in the neonicotinoid family, which are the ones that have the most studies about how they've affected bee populations.
Pollinator populations. Can you give an example? Like, what are some brand names from that category? Common brand names?
Things like Weed and Feed. A lot of those have glyphosates also. So like Roundup is all glyphosate. But a lot of the Bayer products, a lot of the products that you would buy to like feed your roses and things like that. And there's a bunch. We have some of them on the sheet, actually. Some of the, I think imidacloprid. Yeah, imidacloprid is one of the ones in the family. I don't know if I can pronounce them all. It's these ones or some of them. There's a whole bunch of different things that are in that family. And they've been banned in Europe for a while now. But the pesticide companies, obviously, like Monsanto and Bayer and places like that, are super powerful. So, and they make a ton of money off of these things.
Well, what was that town meeting like where you got this thing passed? What was the opposition, or what was the support for this?
So the town meeting actually was fine. It wasn't super high attendance. And I stood outside before it and like handed out like Save the Bee stickers and Feed the Bees and things like that. So people knew about it because I had done door-to-door stuff. And we had also from Beyond Pesticide gotten pesticide-free zone. There's like little signs you can put in your yard. So the year before, I had started passing those out to people who I thought would be amenable, just to sort of set the pace for it, start the education. So it was, I think it actually went pretty fast. We had three people speak, and then we passed it. The opposition was more like in the Ag Commission. There are people who were like, then they're going to want to ban all pesticides, and wouldn't that be awful? You can't restrict us, that kind of stuff. One of the things that's interesting in Massachusetts and some states is there's a pre-exemption rule. So a town can't pass laws, ordinances that are stronger than the statewide.
Okay.
And now, I don't remember exactly, but some of it, there's like a line in there specifically about pesticides.
Wait, the town can't pass something stronger than the statewide?
Right.
Well, then if it's not going to be stronger, then why pass anything at all?
The state has to do it. Oh, that's a good point. Like, if the state does it, then don't you have to comply? Yeah, I don't know. There's some...
Are you sure it's not the other way around?
No, it's something like that, because what they're trying to do is someone finally just presented legislation for the first time that would strike that sentence that says that in terms of pesticides specifically, if it's legal statewide, a town can't, like, ban it, basically, or restrict it. But if the preemption, I think it's what it's called, if that got changed, then a town could like ban glyphosate if they wanted to. They could ban Roundup if they wanted to. And it's not just public property, it's also on private property, because as we know, it affects everyone.
Yeah.
Right? So that's just been that's just been presented. So they said it would take a while for it to get passed, that it would be hugely helpful in a whole bunch of different ways, but that it's unlikely because people think if you own something, you should be able to do whatever the hell you want on it, you know, and that there's no effect on the people around them. But, like, of course there's an effect on all the people and all the systems, the bigger systems. So.
Yeah. Yeah, this whole idea of ownership and owning land, that it's not all connected and shared, whole different cultural way of thinking.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's all connected. Yeah, so the hearing tomorrow is specifically, it's about that bill, and I'm not sure what other bills will come up. I think it's the Natural Resources and something commission. And that they organized a bunch of panels. So there's like the scientist panel and the beekeeper panel. We're beekeepers too, so we'll talk in some of those. And then like the citizen activist one, and it's really organized.
Wait, do you have bees?
I don't right now, but I still work with Tony and his. So we have like bees together, but I don't have it in my house anymore because my neighbors complained because someone got stung and they got nervous and I had to stop having them. But they're also dying at crazy rates, so it's gotten really expensive. So we'll be extracting this year, but like maybe like a quarter of what we extracted last year, because you have to buy your at this point you have to buy your bees every year, and it's really expensive, and then they die.
You're listening to Out There, an interview with Shira Lynn. this interview was done a couple of days ago. There's much more, another like 10 or 15 minutes of the interview talking about bees and some of the like the life cycle of bees and how that's changing, and also about what she's been talking about. I'm going to go back to that interview, but yeah, this is Out There on Valley Free Radio.
Where are these bees coming from? How is somebody keeping them reproduced?
So they come from the south. We went to a talk at the Beddington Bee Club from someone who's a longtime beekeeper up in the north of Vermont. And he was saying, oh, is it him? No, maybe someone else I heard. But anyway, they were saying like it's like an annual, like the way we think of perennials and annual plants. Like it used to be like your bees did their cluster for the winter and then they came out and their populations were huge for the summer. And then they sort of tone it down and it's a small cluster for the winter and used to be a perennial thing. And now basically the model in New England is that you buy new bees from the south every single year. And there are lots of new beekeepers and they're being basically introduced to that model. Yeah, so it's like expensive as a business. It's not really tenable and it's just heart-wrenching. And what they're saying is that, so the bees are mostly coming from Georgia. This guy in this lecture was saying that they tend to be a little bit inferior, that they seem to be, the queens seem to be smaller, that they don't seem to be producing quite as well, and that we've lost a lot of the genetic diversity of the queens because they're all sort of coming from the same place. And then obviously they didn't overwinter in our actual environment, so they're not as well suited. So like the problems
like
now,
they're being bred now to be annuals essentially.
I don't know if
they're not intentionally, that, but that's how it's effect,
working
right?
out. Yeah, that's how it's working out somehow, which is scary. Yes. It's not supposed to be like that. And then there's like some really standard beekeeping practices that we all learn when you mentor, when you learn to keep bees, that are maybe questionable for this moment in time when the populations are having so much, like the diseases are so bad. Mostly it's mite counts, it's varroa mites. But so like you're always taught, don't let your bees swarm because you lose production. So our season is so short here that if they swarm, which means they leave their old hive, they start establishing a new one. It takes them a while to like build the comb and then fill them up and do all of that. And so you don't get as much harvest because they're working so hard just to reestablish themselves. So it's like really basic that beekeepers learn, like, don't let them swarm, give them more space to move into. There's all sorts of things you're supposed to do to not let them do that. But when they swarm, they break up the brood cycle, which interrupts the mite reproduction cycle. So the thought is like, I mean, my thinking, not having done it for centuries, but is that we should sort of listen to them. They're pretty smart creatures and beings. They're very complicated society. So it's like, if they need to swarm because their hive is infested, they're maybe better off on their own feral if we don't get in their way than us like hyper managing them.
Yeah.
But that's like, if you're production oriented as opposed to stewardship oriented, then that's like out of the question.
Yeah.
It's so complicated.
It's just like dependence on human beings, and they won't be able to survive on their own.
Because we always think that we really understand how things work, but there's like the factors are so much bigger and the time frames are so much bigger than what we tend to think. We think we have the solutions and we can't see the bigger picture so often. So, yeah.
So who are you going with from Florence that's involved in this?
That Peggy. She's great. We email a lot. We talk on the phone sometimes. I never say her last name.
Peggy.
But she's McLeod. Is
that?
Yeah, so she was the one who started this network, as far as I know anyway. And so we're going to go in and testify if I'm brave enough to speak in front of a panel of men.
So wait, so you've gone door to door.
I've gone door to door, and then also like this summer. It's a good background. Like this summer, after we'd passed the resolution, and there are a lot of second homeowners, a lot of people who don't go to town meeting, and they don't know anything about it. Uh-huh. And so they've already signed up for their landscaping package, and they get mowed every week, and they get leaf blowed constantly, and all that kind of stuff. So every time I saw one of those yellow pesticide flags, I would go out with my flyer and I would bring it to the person's house. And I've been doing door hangers the year before. And the same people, like, I mean, there's people whose houses I've been going to, like, for 2 years now. And they pesticide, like, every other month or something. Yeah, but I've been doing the door-to-door stuff and trying to just talk to people and leave information. And we have a grant now. Some of the people in our group got a grant, and so we're starting to do a bigger campaign, education campaign. Yeah.
So what's it like when you go to someone's house that's got the yellow flag? What kind of conversations? Or how does the conversation
really
start?
Scary.
Yeah. I can't believe that you're afraid of going.
No one else will do it.
Well, over there. You're afraid of speaking at the state house, but you'll have like this personal conversation with someone where in your neighborhood.
Yeah. Sometimes I just leave the flyer because no one's there.
And then
that definitely
leave?
Happens. Yeah. I just say, we passed this pollinator-friendly community resolution in town meeting. I don't know if you know about it. Here are the best practices that we're recommending, and here's the information. Keep an eye out. We have pesticide-free zone signs you can get if you want to put up signage, and you can come talk to me if you want to figure out how you can reduce your lawn size or you can make it more biodiverse or any of that stuff.
Nice.
Yeah, because it can get scary.
You don't want it to get too personal, you know, right?
No, but I definitely, like, it's hard to do it when you feel like you're, like, the lone outsider or something. You feel like that sometimes unless you have, like, the gang out there doing it. And the other people in my group, I feel like they're not really willing to do that part because it's just, it's like, I don't know if it's considered too invasive or too aggressive or it's not, like, prim enough, something like that, but... Yeah. Like, if people don't know about it, and if they don't connect it to their actual lives, then how do you shift things?
Yeah, I mean, the way you described your presentation when you knock on the door sounds great. I know sometimes, like, when we go into, if we're really passionate about something, sometimes it's hard to just, like, present information on it.
Yeah, whenever I talk in groups like that, or, like I go to... like select board meetings and things, I always feel like, like I sound just awful, and I sound like, oh, it's that angry activist person, you know, like that kind of thing, like that outsider woman who like doesn't mow her lawn or something like that. And so afterward, I always talk to Tony, my partner, and also beekeeper. Like, Tony, remind me, you have to remind me, warm and welcoming. Smile with a smile in your words, you know, but it's like always too late when I remember that. I'm like, oh, I just did it again. Ah. I've ruined it. Yeah. I'm trying to learn. Yeah.
That's cool. I mean, it's amazing. Like, you got this resolution passed, so. Sounds like
because some other people who are more important in town decided to get behind it. But that's cool. Like, I'm glad that, I mean, I have like a major plan for the town and also for the college, and I keep sort of sending it out and no one's responding. But every few months I'm like, here's phase one, which is like really going around town, looking at the map of what gets mowed on a regular basis, because they mow absurdly often. and the town does. And it's a town that like doesn't have a great tax base, and the taxes are already too high for a lot of people. And so, and I think there's a limit too for how much you can raise real estate taxes. And I think we're like at that limit. So it's like so much less expensive if you're not buying fuel and you're not having people mow all the time, and there's not like all the noise, the constant machine noise all over town. You can actually have a conversation if you're going for a walk. So what I want to do, okay, so phase one is looking at the maps and walking the town and the things that get mowed all the time, and staking out areas that'll become meadow, and they'll just mow them once a season or twice a season. And you just mow, you mow a very tidy like path around the outside so that people don't get confused and think it's neglected, which is not, you know, it's wild, it's meadow, it's natural, you don't have to manage all of it. And that would reduce, I think we could reduce the mowing, and then, yeah, I think we could reduce the mowing by, I think we could reduce it like by 70%, like by marking out the areas that don't get mowed and the other ones having them get mowed maybe twice a month, maybe once, starting mowing later in the season, ending earlier in the season. And then it becomes, meadows are gorgeous. Like when you stop mowing, you see all these beautiful things come up. And they're also like edible and they're medicinal and they're terrific forage, and it's magic.
What are concerns or hesitations or fears you've heard around meadows or letting the grass grow?
Ticks.
People are all talked about ticks.
Snakes.
Yeah.
What about snakes?
Oh, I haven't heard anyone worrying about snakes yet, but I'm sure it might come up. I like
for the
snakes.
Ticks, it'll be the snakes. Probably.
Yeah, the ticks are...
No, chiggers. No. Oh, they don't have chiggers up
here. Thank goodness. Heard about them, but no. No ticks. I mean, tidiness, right? But I would say, like, if you want to do something nice for your neighbor, stop, like, with the huge machines and the leaf blowers running all the time. Yeah. I would thank you so much. I would bake you cookies every day, whatever you need to stop making all that noise. And just, like, I just think it's morally wrong to use fossil fuel for that use.
Nature's gift.
Fossil fuel?
No, to use fossil fuel for... to counteract nature's gift of growing things.
Like you're sterilizing a space. Often it's a space you don't even walk on. And the idea is like you're doing it for your neighbors to make it look nice. But then we've sort of imprinted that, you know, in our cultural souls of like, this is what nice looks like, and this is what tidy looks like, and this is how you take care of things. But again, there's like, I don't know, I like a little magic and a little unexpected and a little patience and observing. There's this, So anyway, that's part of phase one is reducing the mowing areas. And then also, like, I want to work with the sidewalk strips where the grass is and replace them with things like the mammoth clover or daylilies or mint or... something that, like, I love aromatics would be really nice.
Yeah.
Something that's, like, colorful. It has to be super salt resistant because our town salts like there's no tomorrow. And then...
if it's right, there won't be.
Yeah. And then you never mow those again. And you have all these, like, beautiful, whimsical flowers and smells in your town. Like, it makes it really special, so...
Just talking to Shira about... pollinators, bees and pollinators, and letting your lawn grow or your yard.
Flowers. Oh, yeah. I don't got no yard. I live at Meadowbrook. They always mowing the lawn over there. Every week, it seems like, you know.
Yep. They do every week.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's basically what the companies do.
Oh.
Yeah. So they're going to complain about loss of income. You know, the landscaping companies complain about loss of income.
Yeah.
People worry about ticks, but you do a pathway through the meadow to where you actually go, and you make it wide enough so that you're not brushing against the edges.
Well, if the landscaping companies didn't have to use the big machines and they could just mow those paths, then maybe they could do it with human power and they could get rid of the machines. They wouldn't have the overhaul, the infrastructure cross.
And the trailers, the huge trailers they have all over town.
Yeah, so it would take them a lot longer, but they could charge less, and maybe it would all come out in the wash, right?
Yeah, I mean, they could charge the same. And they wouldn't be having to buy fuel, have the trailers, have the, you know, and it would take a little longer, exactly. But they're not gonna, they really like their machines.
So, okay, so the statewide
bill?
The resolute, wait.
This is our town resolution.
Just clarify again, this would just affect landscaping companies? What about farms?
Yeah, so the statewide one doesn't address agriculture. There's a huge pushback against that, so it's not going there. Especially, again, like glyphosate Roundup sort of products. So it's the families of neonicotinoids specifically. It does not affect farms. And so it's a regular homeowner won't be able to buy those products. There's also like they tend to get applied in much, much higher concentrations and more often than the package actually says you should. So that's like a constant problem, I guess. Or you apply it when it's raining or about to rain. You're not supposed to do that. Although the licensed people do that too. But
and then people, as a trash hauler, I know, well, people have all the leftovers too. And then what do they do with them? They just sit around in their basements and then they throw them in a landfill or something.
Right. Yeah, and then you have really high concentrations also. Yeah, so this would mean that regular people couldn't buy them, that you have to be licensed in order to apply them, and that I think it's that they can only be applied in the non-blooming season. Mm-hmm. But I have to read that part again because that's like pretty much all of the season. So I don't think they can get away with that one.
Yeah, something's always blooming, especially if you got a meadow.
Yeah, something's always blooming. So somehow that's maybe what I want it to be, but I can't imagine that's actually what it is. Yeah, so, and it has good support. There's like maybe 67%, I think, of the houses in support of it. And again, the Farm Bureau is coming out lobbying against it in a very strong way. And they're saying, you just want to ban pesticides. Like, oh, you're doing this, but next you just want to ban pesticides.
You say you love the bees, you're trying to save the bees, but you're just trying to ban pesticides?
Yeah, something like that. We're like, I am. Why would you ever be putting poison into your common spaces and your air and your water and your, like, why would you ever poison it? I don't understand.
The cult of efficiency, that's why.
Yeah, I mean, it's the cult of efficiency, and that's also the way that corporate priorities or business priorities often have more power than sort of common sense and locals.
More power than common sense.
Yeah, it's true, though. You know, like, we've lost the idea of the commons, and it's really, like you said, it's like private ownership, and if you own it, you can do whatever the hell you want, and things are disconnected. And if you make money from doing it, that's much more important than just being a regular person and trying to be healthy.
Thanks, Shira.
That was an interview with Shira Lynn. I tried to look online to see what happened at the hearing at the State House yesterday, Tuesday, but couldn't find any information. Anyway, I'm sure that'll be going around in the news or in the state legislator again or town by town things. And, well, as you can hear in the background, there's a little sing-along going on at potluck. This interview was done at my house at Monday Night Potluck. And that was when Tom Petty died. But I'm going to play another different Tom Petty song having to do with about the topic at hand.
Kill off the hours. You belong. heart be your guide. You deserve deepest of cover.
Welcome back to that song. Welcome back to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. A few more announcements I want to make is I have this postcard from the Pioneer Valley Workers Center that says it's about supporting the Safe Communities Act, and it still needs some legislative citizen work to get this passed. According to this card, State Representative and Chair of the Massachusetts Senate, Stan Rosenberg, has yet to declare his support. I actually called his office during the break here from the radio station to encourage him to support the Safe Communities Act, but I think maybe it was after business hours, so I just left a message. Anyway, give Stan Rosenberg a call, 584-1649, and encourage him to endorse the Safe Communities Act if he hasn't yet. Another thing, if you got a phone handy and want to make a call, Lucio Perez, 38-year-old married father of four that has been detained by ICE. I guess he's got a bracelet now, it sounds like, but they've scheduled a deportation for him October 18th, I think. But you can call ICE to demand that he approve, or that they approve, a stay of removal for him, and then the motion to reopen his immigration case. There's information about this on the Pioneer Valley Workers Center website, I think. Or if you have a pen handy, you can call ICE, 781-359-7511. I'll give that number again in a minute. I believe that's the Hartford office, I think. 781-359-7511. And tell them to approve the stay of removal and the motion to reopen Lucio Perez's immigration case. And also yesterday evening, I went to a surge meeting, the monthly meeting for October. And the topic, we talked about doing a campaign working on reparations. So stay tuned for more to come on that. Or if you're interested in trying to move this campaign forward, come to the November surge meeting or contact anyone involved in surge. There's a lot of research to be done and figure out how to move forward. All right, thanks for listening to Out There, and stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up at 5 o'clock. Biking was a big